south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, let's get to a few things then. Now, occasionally I get emails from people saying, well, Johnny, you tell us a lot of neat and cool stories about gringo successes down in Latin America, and even tell us about the failures. But how about gringo criminals and gringos doing bad things down in Latin America? Well, here's a story for you. But before I get to that, let me mention that every so often you look in one of the big Latin American newspapers and you see a gringo's been captured and is about to be extradited, or maybe he's being arraigned in Latin court. Now, I'm not saying that's common. In fact, it's very rare. But when you do see something like that, it can be for something really nasty like kiddie porn, pedophilia, or some kind of sexual perversion. You know, in most places you get jail time for that, but in other places it qualifies you for politics or the priesthood. By the way, gringos almost never get busted big time for drugs, or maybe petty offenses, but they usually buy their way out of that stuff. And it never hits the courts or makes the papers, which is why down here you just have to have a lawyer. That said, case in point, there was a recent story in the papers about a gringo holed up in San Pedro Sula, Honduras, who'd been running a kiddie porn operation for some years, selling that crap to people up in the first world, of course, recruiting and enticing young Honduras street kids, which is surely pretty easy to do since there are so many really crappy neighborhoods in big Latin American cities, a lot of young kids on the edge of poverty, and bad guys know they can entice these kids with a new pair of shoes or a Happy Meal. That said, here's a story along that vein, told to me first person from an eyewitness. Now, a longtime gringo friend of mine is an English teacher in a high-end helicopter school in Managua, Nicaragua. After a couple of years of not seeing each other, we connected the other day, and he told me about something that happened in his 20-unit apartment building in Managua, something that really disturbed him. Now, he lives on the fourth floor in that 20-unit building. And he said, in all the years he's been living there, there have only been three gringo tenants renting those apartments. Him, another gringo teacher friend of his, and a 50-something gringo doctor, an MD. Now, this gringo doctor would only be in his apartment about 3 months out of the year. The rest of the time, it would be vacant. And my friend said he only really met the doc a couple times in the hallway and in the elevator. They never did speak much, but he told my friend he was working for a kind of a Save the Children style NGO, you know, one of those do-gooder organizations. He'd be up in the States 8 or 9 months out of the year and come down here to do the counseling and charity work wherever for groups of young kids in dire poverty. Anyway, some months ago, my gringo teacher friend told me the other gringo teacher in the building knocked on his door and said, listen, I think something very screwed up is going on with that gringo doctor on the fifth floor. Then he said, the next time he comes for his 3 month stint, I think you should try to keep your ears open for any strange noises you might hear because his apartment's right above yours. Then he said, what do you know about that guy anyway? Then he said, not much. I've only seen him 3 or 4 times in the hallway and the elevator. Seems nice enough, quiet. And I really never hear any sounds coming from above, from his apartment, but you know, this building is concrete and block, so I doubt if I could hear a shotgun blast if it was in the next room. Then the other guy said, do you ever see him with anybody? He said, no, can't say that I have. Then his gringo friend said, you know, I'm a couple of apartments down from him, but we're on the same floor. And you know what? I saw this guy go into his apartment 3 separate times now. With 4 or 5 young grade school girls in their school uniforms. They couldn't have been more than 12 or 13 years old. He said, well, I think he's got something going with underage girls. You know, poor, underprivileged, impressionable young girls from public schools. He said, look, if this doc's a perverted creep, he's got the perfect setup. He's working at an NGO for underprivileged kids, and our apartment building's got 12 grade schools within a 0.5-mile radius. And you know, when he said public school, that makes all the difference because those are those free state schools, the schools for the poor and the sweaty masses, the ones whose parents make, you know, $300 a month or less. And, you know, as it turns out, almost all public grade schools and junior highs in Latin America give the kids breakfast or lunch as part of the plan. Not much, but it is nutritious, which is sometimes the only good meal they get all day, so parents send their kids there, often just for the meal. It's the incentive. Anyway, this guy told my teacher friend, on two of those occasions, he walked up to the guy's door and put his ear to it. He listened for a while, but he said it was very quiet in there. Way too quiet, he said, for 4 or 5 grade school girls anyway. He kept thinking, what could they be doing in there? Was it a birthday party? Some kind of legitimate get-together for the NGO? A counseling session, maybe? But it just didn't smell right. So anyway, this guy told my teacher friend to keep his eyes and ears open. So my buddy actually went down to the drugstore and bought a stethoscope, believe it or not. And one day, he got a phone call from his other gringo buddy who said, he's in there now with some girls. Listen, see what you can find out. And my gringo teacher friend listened, and what he heard was the shower running nonstop for at least a half an hour straight. And he heard a lot of tiny footsteps, too. Obviously, something very strange was going on in that room. So, a few days later, my gringo teacher friend, a really good guy who's got a great heart, he got a hold of the building maintenance man. He told the guy his suspicions, but he seemed afraid that if he started something, he might lose his job and he wanted no part of it. After all, there was no real proof yet. But my gringo friend, undaunted, bribed him, gave him $15 to open the door with his passkey. So the two gringos slipped in for 5 minutes and took pictures and checked things out. So what did they find? This guy was not a doctor at all. Now, they didn't find any porno or any real incriminating evidence. There was a computer there, but they couldn't get in. They didn't have the password. But they did find out the guy's real name and that he was not a doctor at all. Not a single medical reference book or professional journal. So the guy wasn't a doctor. He wasn't using his real name. Not only that, they found nothing at all referencing him to any kind of NGO project with Save the Children or anything like that. So in the end, there was a smoking gun, but no bullet, no bodies, no real proof. By the way, using an alias is not a crime unless you use it for fraudulent purposes. And that bit about impersonating a doctor, well, this is Latin America, you know. So with no real proof and no one really willing to get involved, except those two gringo school teachers, here's what happened next. My gringo buddy went to a payphone, and the next time the doctor was in, he phoned the so-called doctor and addressed him by his real name, saying, quote, leave those young girls alone or else. And then he hung up. 2 days later, he did it again. And a few days after that, he did it again, all the time disguising his voice. Then he had a few more gringo teachers at his school do the same thing. By the end of the week, the guy was packed up and gone. So you can draw your own conclusions from that little story. Bottom line, Latin America now is like the U.S. was back in the 50s and 60s and 70s regarding the cops, the courts, and the legal system. Of course, I'm talking about off the gringo tourist trail now, which in a way is a really fabulous thing. However, if you're a really bad sort of person, you can come down here to Latin America and do terrible things for a long, long time before you ever arouse suspicion and get caught, and possibly you'll never get nabbed at all. So yes, Latin America can be and is a refuge for some very, very bad people. Because as you've probably figured out by now, there's no surveillance state, which is excellent for liberty, but corruption is rampant. They say everyone has their price, even up in the first world. Though down here, the price is generally so low, there's no comparison. In fact, like I said in a past show a long, long time ago, down here you can buy off a Supreme Court justice for $5,000 or $10,000, whereas up in the States, it could take millions. Or the promise of a future seat on the board of Monsanto. But I don't have to tell you that. So, how do I know that kind of legal corruption occurs here in Latin America? Well, because it's reported every single day down here in Latin newspapers. Not to mention, I know a few Latin lawyers and they've told me cases they've been involved in personally themselves. In other words, they were actually told by a judge or his toadies that not only would he accept a bribe, but exactly how much was necessary. So anyway, sad as it sounds, these things do happen. But note, in my over 25 years down here in Latin America myself, I've encountered hundreds, if not thousands, of good and nice gringos. And some gringos, thankfully just a few, who gave off a very bad vibe. I did not want to be friends or get close to them. That said, I've never had a personal encounter with a real live gringo, pedophile, or pervert. But then again, who knows what goes on behind closed doors, right? Not to mention, seems like everybody's got their own idea of what really makes a dyed-in-the-wool pervert. Like, for example, these days, where do you draw the line? In fact, I remember my mother telling me once that back in the late 50s, my dad, my uncle, and some of their friends were at a bachelor party and someone brought a nudist colony video. In the end, the place got raided, everyone had to pay a fine and go to court, and all their names appeared in the Chicago paper. All that shame and embarrassment for the family back then for a stinking, grainy, faded, old, black-and-white nudist colony video. Man, how things have changed, huh? Anyway, if you remember, a famous judge up in the States once was asked to describe his definition of pornography. He said, well, it's hard to define in a few words, but I sure know it when I see it. Changing gears here, I get a lot of emails from people saying, Johnny, look, I'm a professional. I'm an engineer. I'm a biologist. I'm a chemical engineer. I'm a career guy. I spent a lot of long, tough years at school, and maybe I can make some money down there in my chosen field. So, Johnny, what if I come down to Latin America and try to get a job using those skills? I mean, I'm a real professional, trained in the first world, and I've got a first-class university diploma to prove it. So, with that gringo advantage, why wouldn't a company be glad to hire a first-rate, first-world gringo-trained biologist, for example, or civil engineer? Again, remember, if you have a very valuable scientific or technical degree from the States, it is quite valuable down here, too, and you can get a job. Companies advertise for people like that all the time. Of course, you'll have to know decent Spanish. And suppose you do, then what? Well, for example, if let's say you're a civil engineer up in the States, what can you expect to make up in the first world? Well, anywhere from 50 to start to 100 grand a year, depending on experience. However, up in the States right now, there are virtually zero jobs for new civil engineers. The economy is shot, and even though the U.S. infrastructure is in dire need of repair, you're pretty much out of luck. In fact, when I went to engineering school way back before the age of cell phones, it was common knowledge on the engineering campus that the two easiest engineering degrees to take, that is, the two engineering degrees, back then anyway, that were not ballbusters. Well, can you guess what the two most lightweight undergrad engineering degrees were back then anyway? By the way, the starting salaries for these two engineering degrees were the lowest too. How about this? Civil engineering and engineering management. Yes, that's a degree. An engineering management guy is the liaison between the techno nerd engineers designing stuff and the client buying the service or the package or whatever. Anyway, that said, what if you have a pretty valuable degree up in the first world, like, for example, civil engineering, and you knew some Spanish and you wanted to come down here and try your luck at that career? Especially now that you know full well the American dream has died because your civil engineering degree is, well, toilet paper. So then, why mention civil engineering? Because I have in front of me in the Yellow Pages classified ads, it says, in Spanish, of course, wanted graduate civil engineer. Yes, civil engineering is booming down here in Latin America because, well, you've got nothing but crap roads down here. Not to mention road projects that have been on the books for 20 years or more and haven't even been started yet. So anyway, a starting salary for a real graduate civil engineer down here in Latin America, a cool $625 a month. Now, surely, if a first world gringo came down and applied for that job, he probably could squeeze another 100, maybe 200 a month out of him. And even if you could manage a grand a month, well, you can see where I'm going with this. So don't count on taking your first world degree and transferring down here and making decent bucks. That's not going to happen. I mean, let's face it. When you can actually hire a medical doctor, an MD, for 800 or 1,000 bucks a month, meaning for virtual first world slave wages, you could have your own private MD live in. Well, that kind of says it all, doesn't it? Which is why the vast majority of gringos and expats who come down here either start their own businesses or they come down and live on their pensions or Social Security, whatever, possibly their accumulated savings, and the rest, maybe 3-5%, end up working, at least for a while anyway, as English teachers in high-end private helicopter schools, or they work in call centers. Nope, not as your regular on-the-phone grunt workers, but as call center trainers, because you're the guy with the perfect English. Certainly, at the call center, you're the person everyone else wants to emulate. And yes, as a call center trainer or teacher, you could make 600 to 1,000 bucks a month. I know, poverty wages up in the States. But at least down here, the cost of living is so low, If you come down with a very limited amount of cash, let's say only 5 or 10 grand, a call center or teaching job will get you started and maintain you for a long, long time. And surely within a half year or so, you'll find your niche and you'll start your own business. Most all of us do. Unless, of course, you're a very laid-back backpacker type, and then a lot of times you end up staying at one of those helicopter schools forever and ever. I know a few guys like that. And to me, it's kind of like being trapped in another system, but they seem to like it. At least down here, you know, you've got that lag time thing going, and it's like being a teacher back in the States in the 60s and 70s, where the kids and the parents really did appreciate the teachers, and they actually had respect and were held in high esteem. Meanwhile, up in the States, the teachers are so burnt out, all they care about is that underfunded retirement package that'll probably never come. Okay, can you stand another story? Well, as it turns out, I'm doing a little electrical installation job at one of my places now. And so, as usual, just like with any big project, you find yourself running back and forth to the hardware store and the electrical supply store. And since I started on this thing maybe 3 weeks ago, I've been back and forth to the same electrical supply store about 6 times. Now, I'm talking about a big warehouse-style electrical supply store. They've got everything, from switches, cables, and wires, to those gigantic power poles and transformers. Just about everything. Now, as in most retail outfits in Latin America, you go to a sales desk, and you talk to a guy, and you make your orders, and he gives you a slip of paper, and you go to another part of the store, pay for it, you get 3 carbon copies. Yep, there goes the rainforest. Then, finally, you take those carbon copies, go to another part of the store to pick up your items. There, you'll see 5 or 10 guys scurrying around with slips of paper, going through that chaotic maze of junk and picking out your items. Hopefully, that only takes about 10 more minutes. So, I've been back and forth to this place 5 or 6 times in the past 3 weeks. And remember, I'm way off the Gringo tourist trail, so no one speaks English. Generally. Now, when I finally get my supplies in hand, it seems the same guy always waits on me. A guy with a beat-up I Love New York t-shirt. Even though there are 8 or 10 guys working back there in that warehouse, it's always the I Love New York guy who takes my slips and gets my stuff. Then he walks it out to the parking lot and puts it in my car for me. Normal procedure for this electrical store. Anyway, the second time that guy helped me, he started speaking to me in English. Pretty crappy English. I'm talking about your normal big city, deported, illegal alien, low-class English. Down here, eventually, your ear gets attuned to things like that. So this guy's story, deported from the States, American dream crushed, now working at an electrical supply store in Central America. Now remember, at nearly every visit, he'd help me bring my tubes and cable and connectors out to the car. Each time, he'd try to impress me with his terribly incomplete knowledge of the U.S. But he was a nice enough guy, so I'd let him babble on. Now, at my last visit, just 2 days ago, he cornered me in the parking lot and said, "You know, I learned a lot of stuff up in the States. I can do some electrical, some plumbing, I can paint cars, do bodywork, gardening, drywall, you name it. I can do it just like the gringos up in the first world want it. I know the difference. I know what Americanos want. They care about the details." He said, "You come here a lot. You buy a lot of stuff. Could you use another worker? I'm available." That's when I asked him the million-dollar question. I said, "What happened? How come you're down here and not in the States right now?" Then he looked down and stared at his shoes for a while and said, "You know, I got deported, but it wasn't my fault. I didn't do anything wrong. I've got no record, I promise." And I said, "Well, what happened?" Get this. He said when he got to Laredo, Texas, he went with a bunch of mojados. That's slang for illegal wetback, which is a common term down here. Not derogatory, by the way. His group immediately went to a little meeting at the house of what he called a facilitator, a connected Latin lady in Texas who knew all the ropes, legal and otherwise. She was a kind of a placement service, and she helped him get social security numbers, fake IDs, driver's licenses, and she explained exactly how to go down to social services and sign up for all the numerous programs, including old vomit care. How's that? Anyway, he said he'd had a couple appointments with this lady after that, and the place got raided while he was there, and he and about 15 others were deported. So then I asked him if he was in Laredo, how'd he end up in New York, because he told me he got his t-shirt in New York. And in the end, he came clean with me and told me he'd been deported 5 different times. And in the end, I told him I didn't need any help, and it didn't matter really if he spoke English or not. "What matters to me," I said, "was that you've been back and forth to the States 5 different times by your own account. Why would I want to hire someone who obviously has his heart set on staying in the States?" The truth was, he just didn't have a very encouraging resume. Which brings me to a related story. The other day, I was talking to a new expat a very smart, nice guy who came to one of my recent Latin Insider seminars. After that, he decided to move his whole family down, a wife and three kids. So anyway, they've been down a couple months now, and he was telling me that he'd bought most of his new furniture from a certain furniture shop, and that there was a very nice English-speaking salesperson who attended to him every time he came in the store. Now, my gringo friend made the comment that a lot of gringos make. He said, customer service in Latin America really sucks, except at this store and with this guy. He's a gem. He said not only did the guy speak English, but he went well above and beyond the call of duty. On a customer service scale of 1 to 10, this guy was a 9, which is pretty much unheard of down here in Latin America. Anyway, after my gringo friend had done his deals and bought all his furniture, a couple of weeks later, he has a phone call from that guy. So then, you might ask, how did he get his phone number? Well, that's because when you buy furniture, you get it delivered to your house, and you got to give your house address, your telephone, all that, to coordinate the trip, right? And being that this English-speaking Latin guy was the salesperson, he had all that info. Anyway, he phoned up my gringo friend, my friend, thinking he was just calling to see if the furniture was okay, you know, giving a follow-up call, whatever. As certain salespeople do up in the United States, you know, you always remember a nice follow-up call like that. Anyway, that's what he was thinking. But instead, the guy phoned him up to ask him for a job. So, folks, that is going to happen to you, too. Remember what I've said in shows in the past? Everybody wants to work for a gringo. I've seen that phenomena over and over again. But beware when hiring Latins who already speak pretty good English. Okay, changing gears. To show you the depth and the intellectual capacity of newspaper readers here in Latin America, there just happens to be, in one of Colombia's biggest daily newspapers, a full-page article with the deep and profound title, quote, How to Take the Perfect Selfie. Now, I don't care what this Latin reporter says. I know how to take the perfect selfie. First, you'll need two smartphones. Step one, attach one cell phone very solidly to the end of a selfie stick. Push the non-business end, the end you hold, deep into a soft section of ground. So your selfie stick is perpendicular to the earth, like a pin on a putting green. Make sure it's sticking out of the ground from 1.5 to 2 feet. Then you take a generous dab of vacuous, celebrity-endorsed facial cream. Slather your cell phone generously, being careful not to get any on the lens. Set the automatic photo timer for about 5 seconds. Pull down your pants, spread your cheeks, and sit on it. Meanwhile, make sure that one of your favorite Facebook friends is standing by to take a shot of your face while the whole event is going down. Literally. Then take the better of the two selfie shots and post it on your Facebook page. Again, that's for informational purposes only. Which gets me thinking about that old cliche, God must really love morons and idiots. He made so many of them. Of course, I know none of you listeners out there fall into those categories. We're talking about the rest of the world now. You all know Halloween just ended, right? And for those of you who really know your holidays, you know the day after Halloween is All Saints Day, right? And November 2nd, All Souls Day. Now, Latin America, being extremely Christian, they celebrate November 1st as the Day of the Dead Children, and November 2nd, the Day of the Dead Adults. And get this, on those 2 days, you can actually go to the bakery and buy dead bread. It's called pan de muerto. That translates literally to bread for the dead. Dead bread. That's not all. On that day, you're supposed to eat part of that bread and leave the rest out overnight, and that's supposed to be for the person or persons in your family who have died. So you set that bread out overnight with a lit candle on a table. So it really is regular bread with a particular shape for the holiday. Yeah, it's safe to eat. There's no dead bits in it. Except for maybe a few insect hulls and cockroach wings. You never know, huh? This is Latin America. Anyway, that said, remember, I've got my January 2016 Expat Insider Seminar coming up. As usual, I'll be limiting it to only 25 people. And by the way, it's way over half filled now. With 2 months left to sign up before the seminar begins, I've got 17 people in already. Now, of course, you know the early bird sign-up discount of $500 a person expired on November 1st, and that was about 6 days ago since this show is going out on Friday, November 6th. However, there's still a chance for a few people to get in on that early bird discount. I'll tell you how that happened. Turns out my good friend and webmaster, John Galt, is a pretty clever guy. As any good entrepreneur worth his salt might do, He managed to con me out of 5 seminar tickets a while back at the early bird discount. Initially, he was holding some of those spots for his special friends coming in from Panama and points north. But now, schedules have shifted and plans have changed. And of course, I've agreed to hold to our original agreement with the early bird discount. So if you want to get in on that deal, send him a personal email. That's johngalt@startmail.com. That's John Galt, G-A-L-T, at startmail.com. And at least for a while, he'll be passing on that early bird discount. So send him an email and take advantage of my moment of weakness. Send him an email and get in on it while you can. Oh, and by the way, for those of you who already signed up for the seminar and those of you who will be signing up, remember, there's a new pre- and post-seminar trip being offered by none other than John Galt himself. So if you can arrange your schedule for a couple of days either before or after the seminar, you can sign up and have John Galt as your personal guide. And those excursions, again, are being scheduled for 3 days before the seminar and 3 days after the seminar. So then what's that going to be like? Well, first, you'll get to see the place that's considered to be the most beautiful lake in the world. I know. Everybody thinks the most beautiful lake in the world is an hour's drive from wherever they live in Cleveland, Milwaukee, whatever. But I'm telling you ain't seen nothing yet. But most of all, for all you guys and gals who elect to go on that little trip, you'll get to grill a guy that came down to one of my seminars 3 years ago and who's been living here ever since. And the value of that is he's had so many experiences that most all new gringos must go through at one time or another. That means he's a fountain of information for any new expat. He's done the residency thing, banking, internet, land, real estate, shopping, utility hookups, dealing with helicopter schools, buying cars, dealing with traffic and the cops and lawyers. You name it, he's done it, sometimes with a lot of frustration, but mostly with great success. And best of all, he's an international traveler himself and a real-life personal security expert, too. So you seminar attendees, do try to work in an extra 3 days either before or after the seminar so you can tag along with John Galt and hear what it's really like to transition from being a frustrated first-world gringo to an expat living happily ever after off the gringo tourist trail. And remember, John Galt did all that with a whole 40 words of bad Spanish under his belt. Okay, that said, last week I mentioned I've got my own YouTube channel now. Just go to YouTube, plug in the Expat Files or Expat Files, and get my commentary along with the slideshow. And please, when you go there, don't forget to subscribe to my channel. That's important.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.